Oh, good morning, and it is day two of EIA AirVenture Oshkosh. We are glad to be here up on the stand from the Ron Scott Communication Center. First this morning, we are going to talk to one of the original Tuskegee Airmen, that is Lieutenant Colonel George Hardy. It is a pleasure to have you back on the stand this morning, sir.
I just enjoy being here.
How many years have you been coming to the show?
Oh, about 8, 9 years, something like with McGee.
Yeah.
Senator McGee.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when you're here, you're all over the place, aren't you? You're at KidVenture. You're doing presentations on the flight line and this radio show and all sorts of different places. Do you have time to actually see the show?
Well, it's not too easy to see the show because I'm always moving around someplace.
Right.
But it's enjoyable.
Good, good.
I get the excitement of the people here and how happy they are to see such a show.
Good. And one of your missions is to inspire the next generation of aviators. How do you do that with young people? How do you relate to them and help inspire them?
Well, I'm over at the Red Tail Squadron at Kids Venture,
uh-huh.
and we see a lot of kids over there. And when they come out from the show, we can talk to them and sign little pictures for them and just give them encouragement and whatnot.
For those who don't know, tell us a little bit about the trailer and the film that's in there and what they see when they go to KidVenture.
Well, the trailer is a Red Tail Squadron, part of the CAF, and it's a beautiful trailer. It's a movie theater.
Right.
It has three screens on one side, and it has seats for about 40 or 50 people inside, and they put on a good show. They tell the story of Tuskegee Airmen, but also about the Women's Army Service Pilots. Now, the Women's Army Service Pilots, they don't get enough credit for what they did. It was a fantastic group of people.
Yes, the program has expanded over the years. The original trailer was just told the story of the Tuskegee Airmen, but now you've added the WASP story as well. Again, it's something that travels around the country to air shows just like this. Do you get to visit the trailer at other shows besides Oshkosh?
At some places, but not too many. They travel much more than I do.
Well, you're still getting around pretty well. And we're, like I said, so pleased to have you here. Talk a little bit about your career in aviation. You started out at a very young age. You enlisted at age 17.
Well, the thing is that I didn't think about flying growing up. I just wanted to be an engineer, go to school. I graduated, finished high school in 42, and then I turned 17 in June of 42. So I had a year to wait to get into the service. But then in the spring of 43, they said if you're 17, a high school graduate, you can take an exam. If you pass it, it's a real fast track to flying aircraft. That's when I decided to go in. And with the Army on St. Patrick's Day in 1943, I took the test, passed it, and was sworn in as a private in the Army. And then they sent me home and said, as soon as you turn 18, you'll get orders for active duty, which happened in my birthday in June and July. I reported active duty. July 1943, September 1944, I graduated from pilot training with my wings and a second lieutenant's bar. And
awesome.
That
was it. Where did you do your primary training?
When did I what?
Where was your primary training? Where were you located?
Well, I was went to Tuskegee. Afro-Americans, they went to Tuskegee. Tuskegee had the contract for primary flying. That's what they did. Schools would get those contracts. And Tuskegee... We lived on Tuskegee campus. We had 10 weeks of training at Tuskegee Army Airfield. Then we moved back to the campus for 10 weeks where we went to class under Army control. But then after half a day, we spent at Moton Field flying, primary flying airplane.
Good. What were the airplanes that you flew in flight training?
PT-19. The wide landing gear, that was nice.
You liked it?
Yes, I loved it. It was a low-wing airplane.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then transitioned from that, did you go to the T-6 or something in between?
To the BT-13 for basic. We moved back to Tuskegee Army Airfield under white military instructors, and then 10 weeks of that, then 10 weeks in advanced training with the T-6, and then graduated in September 44.
All right. You're part of the class of 44. And, of course, you also then transitioned into the P-51 Mustang.
Well, yes. Well, right after graduation, we went to P-40.
Ah.
And then went to the P-47 for combat training. And while I was in combat training at Walterboro, South Carolina, in December, I drove an automobile for the very first time. And then February, I went overseas and got to fly to 51 with the 99th Fighter Squadron.
Okay.
I was 19 then, still 19.
Oh, that's amazing. So you were, it took until you were 19 before you drove a car?
That's right. I was 19 before I ever drove a car, yeah. My family never owned a car back in those days, no.
That's amazing that you're flying high-performance fighter aircraft before you ever drove a car.
That's right. P-47, I was flying that.
Yeah.
That was a great airplane in World War II.
What, I know you didn't get to fly the 47 in combat, but you did fly the 51 in combat.
51 in combat.
Right. What were some of the differences that you found between those two aircraft?
Well, the P-47 was a heavy airplane. And once you got altitude and got airspeed, then it was as good as any other airplane around. But the 51 was just a better airplane, I thought. It's more nimble and whatnot than the B-47. And I just love flying it. In fact, I've had that over 40,000 feet, the B-51.
Oh, my goodness.
It was just a beautiful airplane.
Tell us about the typical missions that you flew while you were deployed.
Well, we were in the 15th Air Force. Mm-hmm. And in, I guess, June of 44, they started flying. They were losing so many bombers, they put more fighters into the 15th Air Force. And I was with the 99th one as part of that. We had escorted B-17s and B-24s up over Germany on their bombing missions to protect them from fighters. But by the time I got over there, the only fighters I saw in German were the 262s, but not too many of those.
The jet-powered Messerschmitt, yes. Mm-hmm. Some of those missions must have been pretty long, right?
Well, they were long missions, but the thing is the 51 could handle that because the 51 had extra range. See? In fact, some of those short missions, when we got the bombers back to where they were safe, we had fuel, we would go back over Germany and strafe targets of opportunity on the ground.
How many missions did you fly?
I flew 21 missions 21. Before the war. And
right.
I got over there in March and April
yeah.
of 1945. I was still 19 years old.
Amazing story. With the P-51, how did you, this is something I've just thought of and I've never asked a combat pilot before, but how did you keep from getting bored on an 8 or 10-hour mission where all you're doing is just flying, you know, with the bombers?
The thing is, you didn't have an autopilot in that thing, so you had to keep up. And I flew as a wingman, so you had to keep up with the fellow you're flying on. You stayed with him. If he attacked an airplane, you stayed behind him to protect him from someone getting on his tail. And that was our mission. So,
you were actually flying pretty tight formation then for most of the missions.
In fact, when you took off two airplanes at a time, your leader and you on his wing, and you took off on the steel mat runways, Ramatelli Air Base. But you got used to it.
That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. Well, the war comes to a close, and where did your career take you after World War II?
Oh, I went back to Tuskegee and stayed there as a senior instructor until it closed in 1946. Then I was transferred to Lockburn, where the 332nd under Davis was. But then I got out in the end of November 1946 and went to NYU for a year.
And got your degree?
I went to NYU for a year, but in 47, the Air Force was created as a separate service. And so I got a letter asking me to return to active duty, which I did in June of 48.
And then remained active through the Korean conflict?
I retired in 71.
Right, yeah.
After that, so I had a full 28 and a half years of service.
So you flew in Korea and also in Vietnam?
I flew in Korea and Vietnam. But different types of airplanes. In Korea, I flew with B-29s. I went into maintenance. I became a maintenance officer, electronic maintenance. I was assigned to a B-29 outfit on Guam. Then in 49, then the Korean War started in 1950. And we moved to Okinawa and started flying. I checked out in the B-29 too, and they put me on a combat crew.
Wow.
So I flew 45 combat missions in B-29.
Wow. So and, P-51 in World War II. Transition to the B-29.
Yeah.
And then you flew the gunship in Vietnam?
In Vietnam, the gunship was a third type of airplane. So it, that was interesting. The gunship was a troop carrier airplane.
Right.
Eggshell fuselage would carry 42 paratroopers, whatnot. They made a gunship out of it.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of time in that airplane when I was in SAC.
Okay.
As a maintenance officer. And that was back in the 50s,
yeah.
But now in the 60s, 9 whatnot, they made this gunship, and they had to look for pilots to fly it, and my name came up. I was a lieutenant colonel.
Right.
And suddenly I hadn't flown for 7 years, see, but I had to go back in the 119, then trained as a aircraft commander on a gunship at Lockburn.
Yeah.
At night, flying, picking up trucks and going through the firing circle with them, and then went to Vietnam in April 1970.
Wow. What an amazing career. Mm-hmm. And not only the military career, but now your continuing career inspiring young people. Where are some of the spots where people will be able to see you this week?
Well, I'll be over at the Red Tail Squadron over at the Kids Venture. And I've been with them for years over there. And it's nice talking to kids. Because a lot of them come in to see that show.
Right.
And then they come out and talk to us later.
Excellent, excellent. Well, we appreciate you being here. Any final thoughts before we wrap up today?
I'm just amazed at the organization that puts this thing on here. The number of people, when planes come in, there's always people out telling them where to go and where to park. And when I look at the cars and airplanes that are parked here, it takes a lot of planning to do that and caring people to do that. Because the way they pack them in so close together, plus airplanes also. I've never seen so many airplanes in one place.
It is an amazing place to be, and we are so happy that that you're here. And
then thinking about it, how many come in the first day or so? You know, we left Sarasota and then went to Knoxville and waited because we had a landing time here. So we had to wait until we meet that landing time. Then we took off from Knoxville and came in.
It is quite a dance to get all these airplanes in and out and back home.
In and out, yes.
Well, Lieutenant Colonel, we appreciate you spending some time with us today. Look for him up at Kid Venture, which is behind the EAA Museum. And you'll be here throughout the week, and look forward to seeing you, and hope you enjoy the rest of the show.
Well, I sure will. I've come here for years, and I've always enjoyed it.
All right. This is From the Stand, and you're listening to EIA Radio.